following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Tax Man show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I believe Mr. Dan DuBose has already joined us. Are you there, Dan?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Great, great. Glad you could join us again this week. And, you know, we listen to all the maps to financial freedom that we hear discussed on the air, notably the show right in front of ours. And boy, at times we'd love to interject the notion that if you use a map incorrectly, you may not end up where you're headed, correct? Or where you think you're headed, correct, Dan?
Yes, sir.
And in the case of your retirement, we hear assorted gurus, supposedly, and those that are pitching their brand of financial freedom oftentimes suggests that to get started, it's interesting how they talk about how you can control so much real estate with 20-25% down payment type money, which, boy, I tell you, that's still up there. That's a lot of money to put down to get a rental property when you think back to not just too long ago, when we could put down maybe $500 or $1,000 and control a $70,000 to $100,000 property. But I tell you, the world has changed on that front. And is it ever changing real time right before our eyes? Saw an article from, it's about 4 or 5 days ago that said mortgage rates are almost double from a year ago, nearing 6%. And by the way, that's on a site called Just the News. I believe it's justthenews.com. I really like that site. Did you put me onto that one, Dan, or somebody did?
No, I didn't. I
like that site. It doesn't have a lot of the fluff and whatnot that you get on most of the others. But anyway, the point is those mortgage rates may not be exactly what you'll find when you go to buy rental property. And of course, there's often ways that you can soften the blow by negotiating some strategies with a motivated seller. But bottom line is it's gone up a bunch in terms of being able to get into a property. And of course, just the cost of properties in general have shot up, although that appears to be headed the other way now. A lot more sellers are trying to sell, so the supply and demand dynamic appears to be moving to our favor. But in any event, I do like the discussion about the fact that we can control real estate for much less than a majority of the capital that it takes to buy the property. And I'm going to suggest to you, that, the loan to value ratios, we call those LTVs, has clearly gone down. I'm not sure 80% will allow you to control single family property anymore. It might, depends on how aggressive the lender is towards single family properties. But I'll tell you, in the multifamily arena, it's dropped fairly remarkable. Wouldn't you say, Dan? What are we looking at now? Most of these transactions, they've got a 65, maybe 70
Yeah, we've seen them between 65 and 70 here recently for the multifamily you're talking about, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So they're down. Yeah, they're down from the 75% or so, sometimes 80 of yesteryear, but in or of last month. No, not last month, but let's say 6 months ago. So anyway, you know, I would suggest again that whatever the percentages are on LTVs, interest rates, et cetera, if you start off by handing the IRS anywhere from 30 to 50% of your retirement funds, you have really put yourself behind the eight ball in terms of the financial freedom that you might achieve. It's going to be like looking at a map and you make a wrong turn, and when you think you're done, you're halfway you're halfway to your target, and just not a good outcome. We do want to encourage you, though. You know, I hear people say, well, you know, I'm not ready. I'm waiting for the market to correct. Let me tell you something. The market will correct in most cases. We know that. But in the meantime, you're leaving money on the table if you have a chance to get into cash flow generating investments. And as you know from listening to our show, most of our clients are involved in the real estate private partnership syndication asset space, typically with multifamily apartments. And I tell you, it's just amazing to me some of the transactions that are still coming through, even in spite of the less than desirable loan market that we're in, the lender market. And you know, the sellers are trying to exploit, you know, heightened values, which again, some of those are starting to soften. But you know, we looked at a transaction this past week that projects a almost a 4.0 equity multiple over 4 years or 5 years. That's just crazy that could still be happening. And it's interesting, in good measure, that's happening because of the debt structure that this particular company was able to get. They're a very credible operator. They've got a history of getting to the finish line. And if you want to learn more how we look at these transactions, join us on Sunday morning. We have a second show, the Be a Planner Syndication Mass Show, that Dan and I do each and every Sunday a.m. at 7 o'clock. I know that's a little bit early for some of you, but it is recorded. You could get up at noon if you're prone to, and listen to it later in the day. But bottom line is, this is no time to pull back because you don't think the transactions are still appealing. And in the meantime, it's like I say, if you're waiting for the market to come back, if you're like most people that I know that are in the market, you're down far enough where that's going to take a while. And yet at the same time, you've got the Fed you know, raising interest rates, which has really got the market reacting negatively. So anyway, take a look at some of the real estate options, whether it's single family or multifamily, and let us know how we might help you. I do want to mention that just because you're listening to the show today, we're not your CPA. We would be honored, perhaps, if in the future we sync up with what your objectives and professional services needs are, and you can help us understand more about you and your facts and circumstances. If you don't have existing service providers that you feel like can adequately consult with you on this particular asset class, feel free to go to our website. It's at beaplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com. And there's a link there at the top right for intake forms. There's also a link to schedule a call. Feel free to do one or both of those, and we'll be happy to talk to you and see how we might accommodate your needs. But clearly, before you go try anything that you hear us discuss, at least talk with your existing providers who are familiar with your own facts and circumstances already, and might better understand why some of these strategies would or would not work for you. But in any event, Dan, let's go to the news this week. We've got several articles that I've pulled out beyond the mortgage rate article. And again, I think it's painfully aware what's going on with mortgage rates. And, you know, it's amazing how far they've jumped. And I'm not going to get into the details about the treasuries that are behind it, et cetera. But, you know, I think we're – I don't know how far we're headed. I noticed the Fed just bumped the rate up again, the rate that they allow banks to borrow at. I believe it was yesterday, wasn't it, Dan? Another 0.75%.
Discussing it.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was premature, the article I saw. So it'll be at the when was this? The September meeting hasn't happened yet? Is that the case?
I
haven't really been paying attention. It's kind of depressing news, and yet I still feel like, you know, there's a reason to proceed with many different business opportunities based on it's simply a cost of doing business. And if everybody has that similar cost, well, then theoretically the boats will rise together and come down together, right? So anyway, let's talk about, there's a series of retirement articles that Kiplinger has been providing. They've got a 7-part series, and you know, we've talked about a couple of these on the air already, and I saw the part 5 article that was put out. Let's see, this one was on the 11th of September. So, oh, wait a minute. I guess, I'm sorry, it's not the 11th of September. It's the, what is it, Dan? The 8th, maybe, or the 6th? I don't have the masthead that shows it. But anyway, there's a comment. I mean, they're talking about several ways that you can reduce your tax in retirement. And the first one they make is one that we talk about often. Shift retirement plan contributions from pre-tax to Roth. And understand, this is general advice, whether you're investing in the stock market versus real estate. And I'll tell you, there's reasons, massive benefits to do this pre-tax to Roth shift once you get over in to the self-directed world where you can control your money and invest in these real estate private partnerships. The valuation discounts make your cost of shifting these retirement funds from pre-tax to Roth. And of course, it's talking about contributions. So this would be your current year. You're contributing to a 401 at the office if that's your current status. And we would suggest there's better options, but let's just leave it at that for the moment. And so if you you know, change the way you allocate your current contribution to include the Roth side of the 401, assuming your employer has that, it's probably about 65% of all the large retirement plans these days will offer that. It's not all of them, certainly, but in any event, you know, obviously the younger you are, the more impactful that is. But even for people that are older, when you look at the impact that Roth distributions ultimately, what that cost you. And I know you're going to say, well, yeah, it's tax-free. Well, it's much more than that. It avoids increasing your income that dictates how much Medicare premium you may be paying. And in some cases, that's significant. I mean, depending on your earnings in retirement, that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars for someone with, you know, I don't know, what's the line in the sand, Dan, a couple million bucks in the retirement funds.
Yeah.
And then you look at
certainly
the
million,
needs.
Certainly a couple million dollars would cause you to get into the much higher IRMA.
Yeah, and you know, part of the issue is this fallacy that you're going to be in a lower tax bracket in retirement. Not if you got to take RMDs out of a pre-tax retirement plan, you likely will be in a higher bracket as you reach on up into your 70s when those have to start. You know, that denominator keeps getting smaller, doesn't it, Dan, on the RMD calculation? So that increases the amount of money you have to take out, and the pre-tax type of distribution is what drives whether your Social Security is taxable and how much your Medicare premiums may be because of the assorted rules that affect that premium. But in any event, so back to the Kiplinger article, they suggest shifting retirement plan contributions from pre-tax to Roth. We would prefer to do that in a self-directed 401 trust. They also talk about invest using health savings accounts. I think health savings accounts are often overlooked in terms of the positive benefit they can have. I know we've got more than a few clients that are doing them, but it's not nearly the majority. Dan, you have a lot of people doing HSAs? Or
we do, and most of them are not using it in the most optimal way. You know, they're set up to pay your medical cost ostensibly, but you can use them as an IRA effectively on steroids, I guess, because you can get the deduction or not pay the tax on the amount that's excluded to go to the HSA, and then the earnings are not taxed when you take them out if they're used for medical when you get into your older age. You know, so you could pay your medical bills from your HSA account long after you're retired, or maybe you just quit working. I mean, it's a good plan to use. They're very, you know, fairly small amounts relative to the 401k contribution, but they're certainly worth doing, I believe.
Well, I think it's you know, part of a multifaceted strategy. I also think you know, if you've got enough in a Roth plan that you can actually access because you meet the 5-year rule. I mean, the problem is none of us know, right? It's like I've told many clients when they ask, do we have enough money for retirement? I ask, well, when are you going to pass away? And then we'll figure it out. We'll calculate it, right?
We can get it right exact, can't we?
Yeah, that's right. Get it right down to the day. But anyway, I think it's interesting that you can self-direct. You said it was kind of like an IRA, and you can actually self-direct your HSA funds into real estate, private partnership syndications, or other real estate should you care to. However, like the IRA, the UBIT rules come into play, specifically the unrelated debt financed income component of UBIT, and I don't think I've got a client that's using HSA funds in that context. I mean, I think most people are using it for near-term medical, obviously.
Most cost. Do, and that's what it was actually designed for, but if you're so inclined to be able to have the cash flow to pay your current medical from your current income, not your HSA, then you know, long-term, I'm thinking long-term, you know, for that 30, 40-year term, this really could be a valuable thing at your older age.
Well, that's a good point. I think a lot of people just instinctively pay their medical costs out of the HSA without really thinking about the longer term. And
because they haven't talked to a financial advisor?
Well, possibly.
Or even their accountant that knows about it.
Or they may not have the flexibility of having funds.
Or may not. That's right.
So anyway, but okay. So then we move on in to the after they brought up HSA, they talk about making Roth IRA contributions IRA now, if eligible. And I think that's, you know, that's a great strategy. It's just most of our clients are over the ability to do so. And for 2022, your eligibility begins to phase out beginning at about a 204,000 mark of AGI, or modified adjusted gross income. And for married couples filing jointly, it's 204. For single, it's 129. And so while a lot of people can't do the overt Roth designated contribution, they could do non-deductible IRA contributions. And unfortunately, the party that wrote this article must not be familiar with that option. And why might you want to make a non-deductible IRA contribution, Dan? What would be a reason?
Oh, so you could get you over to a Roth conversion?
Well, that's right. You could do the, what we call, it wouldn't be a conversion, it would be a backdoor Roth contribution. So you make the non-deductible, and then you can immediately, or as time progresses, you can put that into a Roth IRA. And so it's a, it's, we call it backdoor, because for those that are not otherwise eligible, and maybe you also don't have the ability to have a self-directed 401 trust, maybe you don't qualify, then this gives you a tool to start doing some Roth effectively. You get to the end of the day, it'll be in Roth. And that's, yeah, that's a fairly decent number. It's, you know, between you and a spouse, could be $6,000 each. Plus, if you're over 50, you can add a $1,000 catch-up on each as well. So, you know, if you do that for more than a few years, combined with other retirement or pension income that you may have, that's a nice adjunct role for that to play. But I was just struck by the fact that it, you know, this article tells you one paragraph higher, yes, you should make Roth contributions, but no, you shouldn't do non-deductible IRA contributions. And I would think that they would understand that, hey, why wouldn't you? Because you can get that over to the Roth. Now, that assumes it doesn't get taken away from us with tax legislation. There was an effort about a year ago this time, you may recall, Dan, when the Build Back Better Draft 1 was released, where these backdoor, both the Roth and the mega backdoor for the 401, were targeted and were going away. Like by the end of that, you know, we would not have been able to do them this year. So thankfully they survived. We're hoping they continue to survive, but with the lunacy that we see in Congress, who knows? By the way, I guess, and I think I said this last week, but now it's becoming even clearer that, you know, the ink was not even dry on the latest IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, where we supposedly were making a down payment on deficit reduction. And I'm telling you, the longer, it seems like every day there's another facet of Mr. Biden's executive order on student loan debt forgiveness that shows just how far we've blown up the concept of making a down payment on deficit reduction. I think we're up now to where the cost of the plan going out over 10 years is likely to exceed $1 trillion. I think you called that last week, if I'm not mistaken, Dan. And effectively, it's going to give a lot of people, not free, but substantially reduced cost of college, because they're going to limit the amount that you have to pay back to 5% of your income. I forget which type of income it is, but it's after you've taken out enough to live. We know that. And then you're only going to have to pay that for 10 years. So, you know, if you get into some of the private school tuition rates, you know, your cost of attending those institutions just went way down. Assuming this stays on its course,
out-of-pocket cost just went down, but your tax cost is going to go up because somebody's got to pay that tab.
Well, that's a good point. Everyone else in America, including yourself, will have to pick up the tab. And then there's 13, 14, maybe 15 states that are already on record as saying we're taxing it. And I'm sure the federal government will try to do something to offset that. But in any event, I just find this probably takes the cake on just how fast the good intentions of deficit reduction. Once again, any deficit reduction has already been spent times three or four, which is just, it's crazy. And you watch this continuing resolution that we're getting ready to have a fight over now. I think it's the end of this month that has to be in place to avoid the government being shut down again. And just watch how much more we spend than what we originally planned. Everybody's going to try to get their pork into the deal, and there'll be there's already no deficit reduction based on the IRA of 2022, and I suspect you're going to see another big jump in the federal deficit, or what we call the public debt number. And at the same time, I'm not sure, is our GDP still contracting a bit, Dan, or is it snapped back, or what's the
depends on what news story you listen to, I believe, during the day.
I'm sorry, say again?
Depending on the news story you listen to, things in Houston are pretty strong right now from what we see just on a daily basis, but, who knows?
Yeah. Well, all I'm suggesting is that number is coming down the tracks. The tax train is a huge change that's going to hit us sometime 2029 to 2030. And here we are, 2022, and the Congress and the administration just seems oblivious to what's going on. And I don't know, maybe they're going to raise the Social Security age to 85. That's still, a Band-Aid. I mean, there's going to have to be substantive changes. I think what you're going to see, because I know there's bipartisan support to raise the Social Security, not the tax per se, but the base that it gets taxed on. And, I think that's probably the only way to get some kind of solvency built into the Social Security system, which in large measure is driving some of this issue. It's not the totality by any stretch, but it's a big chunk of it. Tell you what, Dan, let's go ahead and take a break. We're just past the halfway point. And when we come back, I want to pick up we'll talk about a couple more news items, perhaps. Or maybe we'll go ahead and talk about how you can undertake Roth conversions, because I know that's a topic we consistently keep getting questions on. And in fact, I think Amy may have a couple teed up today that involve Roth. But in any event, we'll be right back in a few moments with more of this week's Be a Planner Tax Mash show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Get to live.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
BePlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BePlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Okay, welcome back with more of the Be A Planner Tax Mash Show with Nathan Ross and this week's guest again, Dan Dubose, CPA. And Dan, you know, it seems like we mention Roth conversions every week, and the only reason is because we get a lot of questions about them. It makes so much sense given where the tax rates are headed, and we know where the tax rates are headed directionally. We know they're going up. They have to. It's the math behind the federal deficit. And, you know, when you look at how our nation spends its money, we're running out of the ability to buy much of anything past servicing the interest on the debt, correct?
Dan? That's right. You know, there was an article some time ago about the, you know, the U.S. government had less cash than Apple did at one point just because they were, you know, Apple operates in such an efficient way. The government operates so inefficiently. I think that's kind of the point they were making. But it came about that, you know, the government actually outran them because they just printed some more cash, and therefore they got a bunch more.
So, yeah, that's, you know, the big difference. Apple doesn't have a printing press that they can do that
now
with.
They do, but make money, but it's not, they don't have that printing press. That's right.
Yeah, well, I think I saw an article yesterday. Their market cap is, what, 2.7 trillion maybe, or 2.5 trillion?
Yeah.
It's a huge number, huge number. Of course, that doesn't translate to cash necessarily, but, you know,
no.
The point's well taken. I'd rather, in fact, maybe we ought to see if Apple has time to manage our healthcare system. You know, somebody on that scale might be able to do a better job than the current system that we have. I mean, it's just, it's crazy when you look at what healthcare has done in terms of percentage annual increase relative to what inflation might suggest. And I know it's not just an inflation issue. There's technologies and all sorts of benefits that paying those high prices, I guess, ostensibly generates. It's just, why didn't the rest of the world have to do that, right? It's amazing to me at times just how much less healthcare is delivered for elsewhere in the world. Now, that said, I do understand the concept of innovation, and boy, we've had some incredible innovation
incredible.
In the U.S. medical system. Yeah. Okay, well, Dan, for people that might be thinking about converting over to Roth, let's talk about generally how that would happen, what that might look like. And it doesn't really matter whether you're using an IRA or 401 for the basics. So an IRA account versus your 401, either big company 401k plan or 401 trust. I guess there are some differences there. But in any event, you know, you would call up Charles Schwab or Fidelity or whoever, and say, well, gee, you know, I hear these tax rates are going to go up as I get down the road here. How can I convert my account to the Roth? And you want to talk about that a little bit, Dan, on the steps that they would typically tell you to undertake?
I'm not sure what you're getting at. I'm sorry.
Well, you're going to have to look at the well, first of all, they're going to probably ask, I hope they do, you know, how much money do you have to pay the tax? And, of course, I presume you understand there is a conversion tax. That's the first issue for anybody that's thinking they may want to do this. It's not just say, hey, move my money over to Roth so I can enjoy tax-free income the rest of my life once I start taking money out. You have to pay whatever bracket you're in. If you, let's say you had $100,000 sitting at Schwab that you wanted to convert to Roth, and if you wanted to do the whole amount all in 1 year, you would add $100,000 to your current taxable income and pay the tax that's due. And that would get you the benefit, or get you the ability, or give Schwab the ability to move your money into a Roth. So fair market value, the end of closing on a date certain that you pick, is going to be where that taxable income is quantified. Now, same thing would apply with the big company 401, because, again, those investments are in the market. The market gives you the value metric that allows you to figure out, or your CPA, accountant, et cetera, to figure out how much you're going to owe to convert those funds. And you don't have to do all the account. You can do a piece of it. You could do a piece of it for 4 years, 8 years, whatever is optimal in your situation. I know in most of our clients' cases, we're trying to keep that tax bracket they're in once you lay on those additional taxable funds somewhere in the 22, 24, maybe 32% bracket levels, because we feel like that's more optimal than paying 37% or higher. Although if you look at what assorted economists and even the CBO, we've talked about the CBO, Congressional Budget Office study that was delivered in 2009 to Congress, and they basically said the tax rates would need to go up by 150% so that 22 to 24% bracket area would need to go to what, Dan? Do you recall how much they said?
63%. Yeah.
And that's back when the deficit was maybe a third of what it is now.
That's right. Maybe a fourth even, because it was around $9 trillion, yeah. And it's closer.
So bottom line, yeah, that's correct. So bottom line is the rates are going to go way up. So how do we do even better, though? And the way we do an even lower, or a lower conversion cost of paying the tax, is to take your money and invest it, your retirement money, put it into self-directed vehicles like a self-directed IRA or a self-directed 401, the self-directed 401 being much more tax efficient. And when we invest the money in real estate private companies, private partnerships, then we get discounts for the recognizing that a private company in a non-tradable market is much less secure, let's say, from a risk standpoint, and therefore certain discounts are allowed. And as an example, there is no liquidity. You can't go sell the interest in your apartment project typically at all. You have to wait for the property to be either refinanced or sold before you'll get the big chunk of your money back. Obviously, as an owner, you're going to get some distributions where the rents exceed the expenses for a given period of time. But those discounts, without going into all the details, will help cut your tax bill somewhere in the 40 to 70% range, depending on the project and to what extent assorted discounts apply. And if you want to see those discounts, you can go go Google a private placement memorandum for an apartment project, and you can look at the risk factors that are mandatorily disclosed in each one of those documents, and you'll get some idea of what those risk factors are. And look, everything in life has risk, including when you bought the home that you have now. And so real estate risk, I think of as no more, if actually not less, than buying stock in a company that you have no connection to the owners. At least with smaller real estate partnership syndications, you're going to know who's running the show. You're going to be able to go walk the property, talk to your other investors. I mean, it's a much different scenario than when you buy Apple stock. Not that Apple stock is a bad investment. It's just different. And you don't get the discounts that we get on things like Roth conversions when you do those types of investments versus stock market, mutual funds, bonds, etc. I believe Amy's joined us now. Amy, are you on the call at this point?
I am.
Show?
Hello,
very
Nathan.
Good.
Hello, Dan. How are y'all?
Hello. Hi, Amy.
Very good. So do we have some questions this week? We've left you all of about 12 minutes
for
us to go through.
That's enough time, I think. I have
okay.
two questions. And the first
okay.
one is really deals with the Roth conversion that you two were just speaking about. The question is a Roth conversion of an IRA worth the tax that you might pay at that conversion?
Well, I think that's the $50,000 question, but I would just suggest to you that, or maybe the $500,000 question, and I don't know, Dan, you want to answer this one or you want me to continue? Because you've probably got your thoughts on that.
That might be a $25 million question, isn't it? Because if you pay
that's
those
true.
Taxes going into that IRA day one, you're going to pay that over to the IRS. Are they going to pay you anything for that money you gave them?
Well, that's a good point.
I might be able to take that extra money, put it into another deal that's going to make me money year after year after year, so that I can continually be earning on those dollars for maybe 20, 30 years out.
That's true, or more, with the way medical technology is going, the life expectancies are up significantly. Now, I will say that, the question was about an IRA. I would tell you that the self-directed 401 trust, if you qualify, which many people do, especially if you have a side gig or have been thinking about a side gig, you could qualify to roll that money into the 401 trust. The nuance here is all IRAs, even Roth IRAs, are subject to the UBIT, the UBIT, unrelated business income tax, which includes the leverage tax. We call it UDFI, or unrelated debt financed income. And I know this is an alphabet soup of acronyms. Let's just say that the IRA is going to pay additional tax. It's another layer that the 401 is exempt from. So if you could possibly qualify, you would definitely want to go the 401 route. And I don't see how, unless you told me, Amy, that the person asking the question is maybe 80 years old and really feels strongly that they're going to pass in the next 2 to 5 years, okay, in that situation, you may not be able to cost justify it. But that's what we do. I mean, we look at, is it optimal for specific facts and circumstances to make that conversion tax? And we'll help you quantify what those options are. And I'm going to suggest to you that when you look at the confluence of factors that are affected, like we mentioned, the Medicare, Roth also affects Social Security. Many people pay tax on 85% of their Social Security because they make too much money. They eclipse what we call the provisional tax brackets, which is the amount of money we can make without having to pay Social Security. I believe married filing joint, isn't it under 44,000, Dan, roughly, or
If you stay under 44, no tax on your Social Security.
Right. So when you add up paying tax on Social Security, paying the additional Medicare premiums, you know, the Roth is a godsend. I mean, none of those Roth distributions count or go into that calculation. And so it's not just the fact that the Roth itself is tax-free. It's presumably or potentially saving you massive amounts of money on those other calculations. And that doesn't get discussed a whole lot. And definitely something worth paying attention to. Amy, we got about 4 minutes, or no, we've got more than that. We got about 7 minutes left. What other questions do you have?
Okay, this next question is from Mike, who is a regular listener to this program, as well as your syndication math program, which happens on Sunday mornings. His question is there any tax advantage in creating a family trust above your LLC business entity?
Well, above your LLC business, so we're not talking about retirement plans. So there are assorted strategies. There is a trust strategy. In fact, it's one that Dan and I are coming up to speed on even as we speak. We've got several that involve LLCs and trust. And I will just tell you that there are reasons. There is tax reasons. There are asset protection reasons, especially the latter. There are privacy issues. There are the ability, and I want to make this not be any more morbid than it might appear. There's the ability for the grantor of the trust, let's just call it the parents, to control the disposition of trust funds from the grave if they have it set up right, so they can control who gets the money and how they can use it for years into the future once they pass. So those are all strategies that we plan on talking more about on the air, or perhaps are better suited to doing a webinar or in-person training, because we feel like, there's a lot of risk. It seems like increasing risk these days. We know that increasing tax rates are headed our way. And so but these topics are fairly complicated. I'm not sure how much we can get through on the air, but I guess the answer is yes, there is. And stay tuned for more of that. So you raise a good point. I think I heard the word family involved. And some of these strategies are definitely more appropriate for family. We like to see situations where the younger generation, and by that I mean children, 8, 9, 10 years old, get involved. And that can create some additional tax savings. You may or may not be aware that you can pay your children up to, what's the current year number, Dan? $12,000, I believe, out of a trader business. It's got to be an unincorporated trader business that that one or both of the parents have only can be the owner in, and you can pay your children up to, I believe it's what, age 17 or 18, Dan? I've forgotten the
18
limit.
18 majority,
Yeah, and so that can be a significant chunk of savings for the family. You know, when you look at what's coming into the family and how it gets allocated amongst the various tax brackets that each party has. So definitely something to pay attention to. Amy, do we have any others? We got a couple minutes left. Or do you have any questions? Maybe you've got one. We never ask you, do we?
That's right. I never get asked. But I will tell you that over the last couple of weeks, I have snuck in one or two questions that were actually from me. So
I got you.
But
well,
I don't
that's
want to
okay.
divulge which ones those might be.
That's not a problem. You got your time here to fill, so however we can do that.
That's exactly right. Well, in the future, what I did want to say was, in the future, we would like to encourage listeners to send in basic questions to the program, because some of the terms that you and Dan throw around with ease might not be understood by everyone, and
good point.
those types of listeners might not feel comfortable sending in basic questions. So I really want to encourage listeners, if you don't know what the terms mean, ask. There's a valid question, and we will put them out on the air.
Yeah, bottom line, there's no stupid questions. If you're thinking it, somebody else is as well. And by the way, to get those questions in, send them to by text, if you will, to 713-581-0195. I monitor that line. You could also call and leave us a voicemail if you find that easier, or you can email us at info@npross.com, and all or most of us will see those messages, and we'll be happy to discuss them on the air. Dan, since we got a couple minutes here, any other news that you saw this week that we ought to go ahead and talk about? I know I've got a couple, but I don't think they'll give us time here.
You know, we've talked a lot about the Roth account or the IRA or the 401 trust, whatever. You know, most of the time we're talking about real estate, which is what this show is particularly about, or the math part of it anyway. It's important that you be diversified, I believe. You know, it's a good thing to keep your money in your taxable account, a tax-deferred account, and a tax-free account. If you can get your buckets all separated like that, you've got a good plan started, and put your, you know, have your different assets or your different investments in those different buckets, depending on what kind of earnings that it might have. Now,
that's a good point.
A very nebulous discussion or words I just said, but it's important to think about from a long-term planning standpoint.
And Dan, is that the kind of service that you and Nathan provide to people who might call in or people who might be interested in that? I know that task would seem daunting to me, for example, as a beginner.
That's right, and it is daunting even to one who is not a beginner. You know, it takes a lot of planning to do that. It takes a lot of thinking. You got to, you know, look way out in the future, and it's hard to do, no doubt. Daunting is hard, and that's what we're talking about.
Hey, guys, we've coming up on 1 minute left here. I want to just mention one thing. We had another question come in. If you leave your estate to charities because you don't have heirs, then the conversion probably doesn't make sense. I'm not so sure about that. There are some scenarios I can see where not having to deal with the tax by whoever
Let's
gets the money would make sense. We'll talk about that next week, Dan. Put that on your list.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, well, we're at the end of the show. Thanks, Amy, and thanks, Dan. We hope you tune in tomorrow at 7 a.m. and learn more about syndication math with the Be a Planner Syndication Math Show. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of Be a Planner Show here on AM 700 KSEB.